It's my pleasure to introduce your MC for today's event, Steve Farlow. Steve is the executive director of the Schlegel Center for Entrepreneurship at Wilfrid Laurier University. He joined the Schlegel Center in 2002 after running his own business for quite a number of years. Steve is an exceptional coach to many young entrepreneurs and is an active community member, sitting on several boards, including the Canadian Youth Business Foundation and Luther Wood. We're very fortunate to have him with us today, and I'll turn it over to him now.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning, folks. Hello, everybody. I've got one of the best jobs in this region, working with bright young people from all of our post-secondary institutions nonstop. It doesn't get any better than that. And we're going to meet some of the great ones here in just a few minutes. But you are such a wonderful and diverse and talented audience. I can see that at a glance. I thought you might agree with that. And pretty intimidating, too, I have to say, for these bright young people who you're going to meet in just a few minutes. And you know what's happening, right? We have a group of 9 teams that, as you know, have spent the past 48 hours nonstop creating an enterprise, a prospective business that we're going to learn about. The goal, of course, is to develop a game, a video, or an app designed to teach STEM education. It's very specific. I'm looking forward to this. These students, as you know, they're centered or from really all of the post-secondary institutions in our region. University of Guelph, University of Waterloo, Wilfrid Laurier University, Conestoga College, and McMaster in Hamilton. What other region would you see that kind of collaboration among post-secondary institutions? It's part of the culture of this area that you've come to know, and we're so happy to have you here. In the tour you had last night at the Hub, you would have seen that same culture of collaboration where innovation and entrepreneurship, it's valued. It's part of the heritage of this area. So I know, like you, I'm really looking forward to seeing the teams present today. So here's the drill. This is really a great room for this. Each team will have 7 minutes. We'll have the 7-minute time signals up here to present to you. I'm going to be watching their time. It's important that they apportion some of their time to a Q&A session from our esteemed judges that I'm going to introduce in just a moment. The judges will be considering the following criteria as they assess the teams, and you may want to keep this in mind. Criteria: vision. How well does the product or service embrace the values of the BrainSTEM Unconference? Technical. How impressive was the demo technically? Creative. How creative was the demonstration? And interesting, fundability. How fundable is the product? Would it make money? Now, once the pitch is completed, what we're going to do, the judges are going to adjourn and have some fistfights, arm wrestles, and massive discussions to determine the winners. And I think, as most of you know, there are some exceptional prizes here. Are you aware that there's a $25,000 first prize, $15,000 second prize, $5,000 third prize? Do you want to go in the competition? I think there's still time.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
No, I'm impressed too.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's what's equally interesting. In addition to those cash prizes, the wonderful organizers of our conference have assembled an audience choice award and ballot, an additional prize that you participate in. So you all have a ballot that when the presentation's complete, you'll see you make your selection for the audience choice. Your criteria is up to you. Anything you feel. I know I get a vote, and I'll be saying, which one is the most attractive from my perspective, or your perspective, or your perspective? So the audience choice award. And as we leave to head for lunch, you'll make your choice and leave the ballot behind as we head for lunch. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're going to do today. Very importantly, we have an esteemed judging panel here with major responsibility, and I'd like to introduce them to you. Could I begin with a judge who matters? You all know Angela. Angela Myers, welcome as a judge, and needs no introduction. Our keynote yesterday was exceptional. I loved that keynote yesterday.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet Dr. Chris Howlett, one of the most prominent supporters of entrepreneurship in our region. With years of experience, he's worked for a number of the prominent technology companies in Waterloo region, including MapleSoft, Freedom Intelligence, and GeoSign. He recently completed a wonderful job as executive in residence at Communitech, the hub that you saw last night, where he was a mentor to many of the early stage companies in the what we call our Waterloo Accelerator Program. He coached over 50 companies in that role. He holds a PhD in mathematics, an MBA from Schulich. Very talented gentleman. And Chris, thank you for joining us today. And we are delighted that Simon DeBoer is joining us as a lunch, or as a judge. Lunch as well. But many of you have come to know Simon as a delegate today. And he's participated in all phases of new media production, like many of you, and distribution. A lot of insight into successful approaches, maybe some not-so-successful approaches. But after 15 years of consulting and service work for other people's web product, this is what I like to hear, Simon. You're creating your own venture right now, or 3 years ago, and your business is, you're now making games for live events that challenge your creative skills every day. But this is, you can relate to these bright young people because you're doing it yourself. So thanks to all of you for your support and the judging role. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to begin. Could I have the first team come down and join me, please? Welcome. There's the microphone. I would like you to meet our first team from Terminal Velocity. I don't have your first name handy, but welcome. What is your first name?
I'm Trevor.
Trevor, welcome. Let me just get out of your way, Trevor, because when I say go, we're going to begin the 7-minute time clock. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready. Let's
Judges?
Do this.
Okay, go. Let's begin.
So I'm Trevor, and this is Chatterfly. One of my favorite parts of conferences is the discussions with other delegates about the sessions, often right while you're in the session. This often goes on Twitter, but people use different hashtags. Sometimes they get typoed, and it's really hard to find the relevant discussion that covers everything going on in the current talk. I had a really good experience at one conference where they used IRC and set up a channel for each different talk. People would post relevant links, commentate, sometimes make fun of the speaker. But someone has to set up all the channels, and they have to get the word out, probably over Twitter again, so that everyone can find the discussions. What we've done is made this process completely ad hoc by using something that other solutions don't look at, your location. As soon as you visit Chatterfly, we drop you into a chat with all the people around you. Now, we promised many of you yesterday an interactive demo, so pull out your devices and hit up bit.ly.com/chatterfly. We shelled out for a sweet domain last night, but the Libyan government didn't activate it fast enough for this demo. Also, since we're using cutting-edge web tech, unfortunately, we don't support Android yet. All right, so hopefully some of you are here. This is our local chat view. So we're viewing an overview of all the discussions happening around you. As soon as you get to this page, we assign you a random name, so you can start chatting right away, but feel free to make it more personal or add your Twitter handle. On the right, you'll see that some discussions are tied to a specific topic, like the SciGirl channel or John Green's talk. GPS doesn't give us quite enough accuracy to place you in a specific conference room, so you'll have to do that last step yourself. You can click through to one of these rooms, or you can see all the nearby discussions on this Rooms tab. So let's join the discussion about the Chatterfly demo, so meta. Our discussion is now limited to people in this room. If you enjoy a specific moment of this talk, feel free to cheer me on. If you feel things are spiraling in the other direction, I'll try to deal with the heckles. As these votes come in, a real-time graph showing a trend of your talk's awesomeness scrolls in from the right. And after the talk, the speaker can come to this page, see which parts of the talk were best received, and learn how to improve for next time. Since all the voting is anonymous, you don't have to worry about people trying to suck up to you. Note that the speaker doesn't have to create the room, so feel free to start up a discussion when the other Build-A-Thon teams are presenting. So, how is Chatterfly going to make money? We have targeted local advertising because we know your exact location. We can also partner with conferences to help them find which of their presenters are getting the best engagement. We viewed these last 2 days as a build-a-thon, and we managed to create a reliable real-time messaging framework using Python, Tornado, WebSockets, and Redis as a backend, and then at the same time polishing it into a final web product that we're proud to launch publicly, at least as soon as the Libyans get back to us. Our team is Ronik, Xenia, and Sean in the back, Team Velocity, and that was Chatterfly.
I just have a question or two.
Chris. Yeah, go for it.
Looks really great. How much did it change over the 48 hours? is it what you envisioned when you started?
It's the same general idea. I'll tell you that it looked like black text on a white background about 20 hours ago. But the general idea, we focused a little bit more on the analytics after talking to a bunch of you guys yesterday. And I guess a lot of you do public speaking and finding out how you did kind of without bias seemed important to people. So we focused a bit more on that.
Great. Angela?
So are you looking at this as more of an assessment tool for the speaker rather than a discussion tool for the group?
So we provide the discussion tool to bring people in so that they'll use it, provide a service there. But then kind of the more marketable side of it is that we have this data about what people thought of the talk.
Where do you see it going next? What are the next three features you'd throw onto it? Or
the next three features. I think it would be interesting to do more intense data analytics on what we do collect. And actually, since a lot of talks are recorded, what we'd really like to do is tie this data into a recorded session that goes up on YouTube, for example, or it might have to be some custom site where we could actually point out the most interesting parts of the video based on this crowdsourcing.
Any other questions from the judges? Chris.
Would it make sense to somehow tie it into Foursquare?
We did think a lot about pulling tweets in because I think we can get some geolocated tweets, but I guess we could look at Foursquare check-ins as well, try to find more relevant stuff to bootstrap the information.
Is there a capacity to how many individuals can be on it? So if you have a room of 10,000 or a room of 100, does it?
We haven't hit that yet. It would take work to scale it to that level, but it's feasible.
As it launches, what's the capacity right now?
We haven't pushed it to its limit yet, and we've had about 10 people using it pretty intensely at the same time.
Okay.
So, and by 10, I mean 4 of us pretending to be more than 2 people each. So my guess is it would probably scale to a conference of this size, no problem. Further than that, might be pushing it.
Okay.
Makes sense. We can maybe squeeze in one more question from the judges, or you guys are happy.
Yeah.
Everybody happy? Let's give Trevor a hand. Well done, Trevor.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Well done, Team One from the University of Waterloo. I'm amazed at how far they came in 48 hours, and I'm told they managed to have a shower just a few minutes ago, too. Good for all of you.
Yeah, does it need a switch?
I'm giving the judges just a moment to assemble their thoughts, and we're going to move to the second team, who I know are ready. How about if they come down? I wonder if you join me in welcoming Team Scions, also from the University of Waterloo. Come on up. I'm going to share a microphone with you.
Thank you very much.
Come on up. Welcome. Hi. Just hold on 1 second. I want to make sure the judges are ready. You're looking very well for 48 hours of hard work, if I do say so. Now, judges, are you ready to go, or would you like a little more time?
Okay.
Chris, you're good to go?
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, everybody ready? Team Scion, go.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Eric, this is Katie and Robert, and we are the Scions. Actually, we're just 3/4 of the Scions. Our fourth, Lucas, he's come down with a pretty terrible flu, so he's back home right now trying to recover, sadly. So he's gonna miss this. We're here today to show you a video trailer for First Class Physics, which is our vision for science education using modern technology. First Class Physics is a program of courses in modern physics based here at the Perimeter Institute. These courses are aimed at people who are interested in learning more than just buzzwords about deep topics like quantum mechanics, but for whom a standard undergraduate education is not an option for whatever reason.
Not everybody can talk about fundamental ideas of, say, string theory without overloading one with detailed mathematical formalism. We will recruit leading researchers who have a reputation of being able to explain concepts very clearly to be able to develop these courses as a part of a residency at PI. Once developed, these finished products will be made. And be available on demand at the convenience of the student.
So one of the most important features of our plan is to take full advantage of all the opportunities that come with pre-recorded content. So interactivity is really key. It's basically built right into the lectures. The students are required to solve problems and to participate in regularly scheduled discussion sessions with other students. So we hope our trailer will convey to you what makes First Class Physics so exciting and so much different from the previous generation of web-based courses. Can we have the video, please?
What is the nature of gravity?
How did the universe come into existence?
What is life?
Is the universe
How can I learn more about modern physics?
It has blazed the trail.
Science is extremely important.
Why should we do it? It will succeed.
First Class Physics at the Perimeter Institute is a novel online coursework environment that brings the key ideas in modern physics into the public's reach.
It doesn't target students. It targets the general public.
This is going to be very different from the traditional Blackboard learning.
First Class Physics builds from the foundation of modern physics up to some of its most ambitious ideas. Each of the five courses consists of 15 to 20 45-minute long lectures and is entirely self-contained. When necessary, key mathematical ideas are introduced in supplementary presentations that students can choose to skip after passing a short quiz. Leading researchers are recruited to lecture, and they play an active role in course development as part of a two-semester guest appointment at the Perimeter Institute.
I think many of the concepts in string theory are very basic.
After every five lectures, students must complete a set of multiple-choice problems designed to determine whether they are retaining the course's key concepts. They must then participate in a scheduled discussion session, where they will be organized into small groups displaying a range of ability and asked to go over the problems together. Prepared solutions are available to students after they complete the discussion.
The student is always engaged with the material.
Each of the five courses has a dedicated online discussion forum, where struggling students can get concepts clarified and those who are more comfortable can explore further or reinforce their knowledge by answering questions. Users can rate posts, and highly rated unanswered questions will be addressed by the professor. The idea of interactivity is built into all parts of the program. The lectures will pause every 15 minutes, and the student will have to demonstrate that they have understood the main idea before proceeding. If they cannot, the software hints at the correct answer and then suggests review material.
This is very hands-on. This is very, very interactive.
Checking my understanding during the lecture was incredibly helpful.
The public is receptive to this concept. The success of Stanford's Open Robotics and AI courses proves that combining the name recognition of a respected research institution with a focused social media campaign is a recipe for widespread interest.
It can be done easily. PI is remarkable in so many ways.
Upon completion of a First Class Physics course, students receive an electronic copy of an official certificate, complete with a personal verification code. At this time, students are invited to donate to First Class Physics based on their level of satisfaction with the course. Check us out on Facebook or at www.firstclassphysics.ca.
Undergraduates or a typical layperson can start to get a grasp of what all the research in string theory is really about.
Well done. We've just got a minute and a half or so for questions. Judges?
Quick one.
Could you compare it a little bit to the Stanford course? It had the feeling it's a little bit different. The Stanford course has a lot of sort of off-course activity, homework assignments, stuff like that. Are you anticipating that as well?
So the idea isn't to actually emulate an undergrad course. We're not going to ask people to do, we're not going to grade assignments. These things are kind of interactive between students. So I think, Stanford's course is really just an open undergrad course, which is identical to a course that exists at the university. This is more meant for people who don't want to learn how to do calculations, but want to learn the main ideas. And also, Stanford's courses are just lectures, I think, that get put online along with the associated assignments and stuff. And they don't really take advantage of all the opportunity that they have by recording this content in advance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's your plan to engage that audience that from Facebook? Are you assuming that there's just going to be people out there that just want to come and just grab a course? What would want them to go here versus just searching the internet for a physics topic and possibly, you know, finding one of the Khan Academy videos? How would you differentiate their path to get to you?
So one thing is that Perimeter Institute really has some name recognition here. I mean, this is a place where there are serious scientists doing research, and they're really trained in their fields. And the idea isn't really to learn about a particular idea, but rather to get a picture of what's going on in science in a general sense. So I think we feel that the interest is really there already. I think outreach... Oh,
great job. Great job. Thank you. Good job. Good job. You fellas you're off this way. Good job. Welcome. Good job, Team Science from University of Waterloo. Good job. I think the bar is being set pretty high here. Let's have the third team come down. I'm just going to give our... Pardon? Okay, take your time. We're just going to give our judges time to deliberate and do other things. I urge all of you to keep your concentration and focus. You have a very critical task with the Audience Choice Awards. We're all set.
Thank you. Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wonder if you join me in welcoming our third team. The team is called Koyas from McMaster University in Hamilton. Welcome. You're up. Good luck. The judges are ready. Everybody ready? Let's go.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. We are Team Koyas. We consist of myself, Glenn Tilvin, and Nathan Jervis over there. I am the lead designer for the team. He is the lead developer. So basically, what we have developed is a game called Chemistry Fever. This game will basically give you a set of elements, and you have to design different compounds and substances and stuff to bind them together and then build them in the end. So it'll explore the different structures of them, the different formulas, and everything else. So Nathan, just go back to the main menu for a second. So now we have a cookbook in here. Now this cookbook contains the elements and the compounds that you are going to be using or else building. Now for the elements here, we have just the ones that we're going to be using in the demo today. We have barium, which contains all the information that you would need for it. And it goes through all of them if you hit the arrow to the right. So yeah, and it'll go through hydrogen. Now, then the compounds, we have barium hydroxide. It shows you the structure of it, and it shows you the formula for it as well. So now we're going to show you one of the missions. So we're going to show you hydrochloric acid, first of all. So this is your playing field right here. And the main goal of the game is to just build walls kind of thing and trap the chemical or the elements that are going to be used. So right now, he's trying to isolate the hydrogen and the chlorine molecule. If he can do it. Almost there. There you go. And it's going to fuse it. All right, now this is a structure. So now he's going to place it in the proper orientation. So this is a linear structure for it. And then he's going to submit his work, and he passed. So he got an A+, because it's perfect. All right, so now we're going to show you nitric acid. So now he's just going to build a wall kind of thing. And he thinks he's got it, so he's going to try fusing this. But he failed, so it blew up in his face. So now we're going to go into the nitric acid, and we're going to pause it for a second, and we're going to go to the cookbook. So now this cookbook contains everything that we need. So we're going to go to nitric acid, and then we're going to see that it requires 3 oxygens, 1 nitrogen, and 1 hydrogen. So now we're going to go back to the game, resume it, and now we're going to isolate the chemicals. Let's hope it's a little bit shorter than last time, but... Now there we go. Now we have our little structural diagram here, and he's going to try and place them all, and then if he can remember where they all go. So now he's going to submit it, and it blew up in his face because he didn't properly construct it. So now we're going to go to the boss level. Now these boss levels are at the end of each section, and they kind of, this one's an acid alert, so you have to build the base to neutralize the acid. And here we have 3 different chemicals, and you have to build the base out of all of them. So let's see how he does. In this case, I believe you're building barium hydroxide, right, Nathan?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Now all he has to do is construct it. And there we go. We saved ourselves from the acid alert and neutralized the acid. So now we felt that this thing or this program of ours would be very helpful for everyone else because you're engaged in a game and you learn stuff afterwards too. So it's very educational. I know myself going through high school chemistry and first year university chemistry and engineering, I found that these things were kind of tough. So hopefully this will instill it into your memory so that you can properly learn the proper structures and everything else. And so this is a web-based application that we developed in XNA C#. So that means that it's easily portable to a mobile device, which we have right here, working on a Windows 7 phone. So it's very easily portable to like iOS, Android, any of the major mobile devices. And we could even use it on iPads or Playbooks or anything like that. So yeah, are there any questions that we can answer?
Good presentation. Questions?
Why isolating chemicals? And to take that to a wider range, what would you put onto this to go around it? What would be the next few things you would add to it?
Like, what do you mean by the next few things to add to it? Like,
what would be the next things you would do with this project?
With the project? Probably, like, as we got many... suggestions yesterday, we'd probably list them into categories like for grades or else years of university or whatever, and they get more advanced. Like we can go into alcohols and ethers and stuff like that, more organic chemistry with this sort of thing. So we just want to kind of expand upon the structures of everything else, like the structures of the chemicals that we're making. So
is the time spent playing the game, how are you thinking that will translate into understanding chemical other than a yes and no? Yeah. That experience of, because the game is engaging and fun, I'm not sure I'm thinking about chemicals and chemical structure while I'm playing it. I'm sort of looking at so how are you helping that connection happen?
Well, basically, we're providing the structural formula or the formula on the side of the screen, And so we want them to properly learn how to read those formulas. Like say, for example, barium hydroxide contains two oxygens and two hydrogens. But some people might think that it's only two hydrogens. So you're seeing all these different chemicals, and we want them to understand that it is actually two hydrogens, two oxygens, and one barium molecule that you need for that specific compound. So that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to have a bunch of different chemicals in there, and then you isolate the ones that are required so that you understand which ones are required for that reaction.
Okay. You're good to go, judges? Good. Well done, team. Team Koyas. Thank you. Good job. That's Team Koyas from McMaster in Hamilton. Good job. We're about to begin our fourth presentation. We'll just give the judges a moment. You know, an important point is that the prize money that, as we said, is really substantial, but it is clearly designated for the business, the enterprise, to advance it. That's an important point. Now, I would like you to meet our fourth team, also from the University of Waterloo, Velocity Raptors. Welcome. Come on up, guys. Welcome. We'll just wait one sec. You're good. Let's just make sure the technology's up. You guys ready? Everything good, Mark? Judges are ready?
Ready.
Oh, just one moment.
This will take less than a moment, but thank you for your
patience. Let's just wait a second. 7 minutes goes quickly.
I don't actually mind starting in advance before this actually boots up.
Well, let's just make sure we're good to go.
Wait. Oh, here it comes.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Gorgeous.
So while this is doing, okay. I don't mind talking. You ready? Yeah. Velocity Raptors, University of Waterloo. Judges ready?
Ready.
Let's go.
Hi, we're a three-person team. One of our people are actually not able to be here. That's Angela. But Kevin and I, Evgeny, are a part of Velocity Raptors. We seek to solve a problem of note-taking. So note-taking can be notoriously difficult in a classroom. For several reasons. One, you may not show up to class, and therefore you cannot get good notes. Part two, you have notes, but maybe you're not writing fast enough. It's possible that you also have some sort of learning disability, which prevents you from being able to concentrate on note-taking as well as listening. And part three, perhaps you're a very good note-taker, but your notes, just as everybody else's notes, are prone to human error. So, we built this app called NoteShare. And NoteShare seeks to solve all of these problems of notes. Here I'm going to log in. And I'm going to log in as a teacher right here. And so what this app does is it allows for you to creates a collaborative environment for you to be able to take notes on a per lecture basis. And here's me selecting my object-oriented programming course. No lectures are there, so I'll go to here. And in predicate logic, let's look at lecture 8. So here I have a notepad that I can just begin typing. I'm listening to the teacher, and as I'm listening to the teacher, here I am taking a note. This is all actually going to be publicly viewable. And as I keep on typing and add different words to it and press enter, it keeps on adding all of these notes. People then can also, after these notes are taken, can go into comment mode. And then they can begin, commenting on the notes. So here is comment one. And here is comment two. So part of this seeks to, so part of this is because, one, collaborative note-taking is going to be better than regular note-taking. The reason being is because everybody can contribute and add and delete a la Wikipedia style to your current note set. Additionally, with certain courses, notes are deceptively difficult. For example, in math courses. I don't know if any of you have taken linear algebra before. but oftentimes, you can have maybe a small paragraph of a proof. And this is something that you're going to be reading for 45 minutes straight because it makes so many references. And so I can write down the notes as like in my class of just a paragraph, but that tells me nothing. And yet when I'm able, I can click on, I can click on this one line of linear algebra, and here will be a full explanation of maybe people asking questions, professors, other students contributing to why this is the next logical line, why this makes sense, and so forth. Comments after comments, and people will actually just be able to edit it and just like make it, you know, happen. By the end of it, we seek to have a complete platform to be able to have a complete notepad for every single lecture and every single one of your classes, so that this way the students have A, the best learning experience, B, the most clear notes, and C, collaboration, clear notes, and just get prepared for the exam and learn the material to the best of your ability. As far as profitability models of this is concerned, easily any school would be able to pick this up by licensing it, and they can make this available to all of their students by, you know, listing all their professors and listing all their classes, and you're automatically enrolled, not unlike certain systems we have in University of Waterloo, like Piazza, news boards, and so forth. Any questions?
Good presentation. Chris.
Do you think the professors and the administration would support this or oppose this or not care? I mean, from the point of view of the professors, you're making it easier not to go to class.
I am very, very glad that you mentioned that. Sometimes from the point of view of some people will mention that, but we also have in computer science right now, we use this news group system called Piazza. And oftentimes, whenever students have questions, it's not something that the professors are actually opposed to. It's something that they actually get involved in, and they help answer all the questions. Additionally, people can post videos online. I mean, we all have references to Wolfram Alpha that are available. But I still go to my calculus class because sometimes the one-to-one interaction is better for me to learn. So people will learn on their own style no matter what. I have another statistics class that I just don't go to because I can read the textbook much better than, you know, learn from this particular teacher. Everyone will learn the way they want to regardless, but this will allow an extra facility to be able to help more people learn better.
How would you differentiate your product from free products like Evernote, Google Docs, that are already existing in the marketplace with more rigorous capacity to enable collaboration and communication?
Well, part one is that unlike Google Docs, this is fully Notepad-centric. And then compared to Evernote, this is centric specifically to the students and the school. So again, it has all of your courses laid out and your lectures organized in advance. You have your teachers logged in and only the students subscribe to it because like we set it up for you in advance. And this way we'll be able to ensure that it's a very, very closed environment where you can actually just begin incubating and collaborating on a lecture per lecture basis.
If I'm a good note taker and I put my notes in here and I think something was important and someone else removes it, I'm gonna be upset. How do you deal with that?
That is a good question. The only people that can actually remove notes, although notes are editable, the only people that can actually remove notes are the teachers and professors. So otherwise, all notes will remain there and they'll all have comments. If they're bad notes, they'll get a lot of comments from students saying this doesn't make sense or this is just poor. And if it can't be rephrased or reworded, eventually a teacher or a TA member will remove it.
I think we're done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good job. Good job, guys.
You can have it for the time being.
I think we're going to come and take the microphone. But thanks, guys. Good job.
Thanks very much.
Good. Could the next team come down and join me? Ladies and gentlemen, we've heard from University of Waterloo, from McMaster. We now have a team from Conestoga College here in Waterloo Region. The team is called Conestoga Dev. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll just wait a second till we're sure the judges are ready.
Sure.
The judges are ready. Are you ready?
Sure.
Conestoga Dev, let's go.
Okay. We believe we have created a game where the teacher can actually introduce to the students a form of polynomials through projectile motion. So we actually have an actual game called Volley Fox, and the whole concept of the game is to introduce the student with the use of
speed, angle, and distance.
Yes, but I was going to go more for the place of origin. And that's how the game would start. We would go for levels from 1 to 3 for place of origin. The user would actually input an actual number, a value, in order to make the fox actually fly to catch the birds. The whole concept of the game is you catch the birds, you win points. If you get hit by the raccoon, you actually lose points. The object of the game is to be able to have the student by levels, input the speed, a different level, input the angle, and a different level would be to be able to manipulate the angle of the actual cannon. Hence making a polynomial. We would have set values according to the levels, and the more difficult the levels get, the more values the user would have to input. So I would see this as the start point for a teacher to be able to get the attention of the students and try to explain how it could be useful in other forms that they can understand. So I can see a teacher actually going in class and trying to put an equation on the board and saying, can you please try to figure out what's the actual value that I need? And then actually going into the game and implementing it once the students have collaboratively put an answer together and actually demonstrating it, actually, if it's going to work or not. We also have a replay frame that you'll be able to use once the game is done and play it back so the teacher can actually go step by step where the values landed, and the actual values will recalculate as you use the arm to replay the frame. So therefore, the teacher can also investigate why it failed or why it actually succeeded. The levels will increase. The difficulty levels, the difficulty in the levels will be the size of the birds, the raccoons, the amount of raccoons. We also have a stage 2 for a higher level where we can actually take away some of the ground, so then it limits the position of the actual place of origin. And that would be a higher level, of course. Yeah. The actual game was made through object-oriented programming, which is ActionScript language. We believe this is actually usable because we can travel with it or leave it on an app on your desktop or upload it to a website so anybody can actually access it. We also believe that it targets different type of learners. I think it's more oriented to all levels of learners, whether you're in high school, targeting grade 9, grade 10, trying to explain new aspects of physics, or you could actually do it in a center where adults are trying to acquire their GEDs, and this is a more basic understanding of what they're trying to accomplish. Do you have any questions for us?
Chris.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. The next step would be for the students to be able to input polynomials that describe the trajectory and stuff?
There would be calculations that you can put in. Some of the calculations could already be done. They would fill in one of the calculations. And then that would escalate. They could then fill in 2 or 3 of the calculations in order to complete the trajectory.
Is the goal of the timer then to beat your time? Or what's the outcome Just the experimentation and the reflection of what the proportions are?
The time is actually just self-motivation.
Okay.
So you can try and get it done in a faster amount of time.
You can later on implement in different equations where you want to track the distance.
I'll take the mic.
So that's something that's already implemented there for you.
You were saying that you think that the way this... Sorry, I'm confusing for a moment. All right, how do you think this gets paid for? I'm going to change my question.
Sorry?
How do you think this is going to get paid for? What's the financing model you think would work behind this type of product?
This would be mostly educational. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at either colleges and homeschooling.
High schools. Support, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think one of our target is to have more people be able to graduate at a higher level. A lot of people are dropping out. I think the government might be able to implement this in the classrooms, so we can increase that the level of graduates in our province.
Oh, very good.
Was there any other questions?
I think we've got it covered. The judges are good. You did a great job. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Conestoga Dev. I'm watching the audience. You're really attentive. This is good. Let's take a minute. Absolutely. This is intense, but it's going quickly. We're coming up to team 6 of 9. Okay, we're good. Ladies and gentlemen, Team 6, a very interesting name. Team Croutons. Crouton Labs, I'm sorry, Crouton Labs. Team Croutons. Crouton Labs from the University of Waterloo. Hi, guys, welcome. Crouton Labs. Judges ready?
Let's go. Good morning, delegates. I'm Drew. These are my partners, Jake, Akash, and Christoph. And this is Ropuzzle. Ropuzzle is a puzzle game where the player can build, design, and program a robot that navigates mazes, overcomes obstacles, defeats challenges, and reaches the green goal. As you can see here, you can drag parts from your parts list into your robot, in this case a pair of motors, and then in this window, you can start programming your robot. Jake back there is programming this robot in JavaScript. JavaScript is a great language. A lot of puzzle games implement their own language, which is kind of neat, but it's not very useful outside of that game. JavaScript is a programming language that's used all over the internet, so this is a transferable skill. It looks like Jake is about ready. Let's see what it does. Boom, level complete. If you look at the next level, we've got a few more challenges here. In this level, we've got some sensors. There's a compass to tell you which direction you're going. There's a color sensor. So you need to look at the wall you're bumping into. If it's black, you turn one direction. If it's red, you turn another direction. Show us how it's done, Jake.
Great. So I'm going to run you through the reasons for building this game and the design principles we kept in mind while designing it. So what is Ropuzzle? It's basically an online game for high school students to experiment with engineering and technology, get them to take their physics and math knowledge that they learn in class and apply that to solve a real engineering problem. The problem is that nowadays high school students don't really get an introduction to engineering and technology. Sure, they have courses that teach them about theory, but they don't really get to build anything. And the programs that exist nowadays, like FIRST Robotics, require a high investment in terms of capital. So what happens is that most students don't really end up getting the resources they need to take their knowledge and transform that into something that they can actually build and design. The way we solve this is by choosing robotics as an introduction into engineering, because they can design the mechanical, the electrical, and the software component, kind of giving them a feel of how most engineering systems work, because nowadays everything has multiple components to it. We also chose to have JavaScript, as Drew mentioned, because it is a transferable skill. So by playing this game, they are increasing their skills in programming with a real language. And the way we've built the levels is that you start off with a really easy level where you just get the motors to move, and then you start adding in sensors, then you start doing more complex tasks. So the algorithms kind of build up, which basically gets them more and more interested by giving them a bite-sized approach to engineering. So the cool technology we built over the past 48 hours, we created a robot simulation engine which sits on top of a physics engine. And what this does is that it allows us to dynamically add new sensors and motors onto our model so that we can really expand this to encompass anything that teachers want to teach through their courses. So this could really be expanded into like a university setting where you're doing a signal, where like you have an output signal and an input signal, and you want to like enter the components to condition that. It's also been designed to provide a low barrier of entry, because you don't need any physical components to actually get started. You just need to open up a browser instance and go and start designing a robot.
If we were to look at commercializing this product, the first place we would look is at schools. We could provide custom levels, allow teachers to integrate RoPuzzle into their curriculum, and design custom levels so that the students can learn, while playing this game, exactly what the teachers want them to learn. We also considered selling the physical parts of the robot. If a person designs a really cool robot that solves a complex task, they might want to build a real-world version, and we could sell them those parts at a profit. RoPuzzle is available online right now. You can check it out, ropuzzle.com. It's a fun game. You should all give it a go, and that's what we have. Thank you.
Good
job. Do the judges have any questions?
How do you deal with and hopefully support good failure?
I'm not sure I understand.
What if their robot or programming or something doesn't work? And this being scientific method, you're going to get more failure than you're going to get success. How do you handle that?
As you can see on the screen, even if your robot doesn't do exactly what you want, it's a very visual environment. You can see exactly what it is doing. And you can look at you can look into the code, see what the sensors are reading, see what your outputs are, and if it's not going where you want, you can look at why. You can look at what the sensors are doing. You can look at if for example you're getting two readings when you expected one, you might do the same action twice, and you can look at that in the code.
Okay, Angela.
So you said this was integrated into the curriculum. So how do you envision the teacher-student interaction around this?
What we envision is a teacher either designing a level themselves or contracting us to design levels for them. For example, a teacher who's teaching optics could have some lasers on their robot, and the obstacles are lenses and mirrors, and they could use that to show what the different optical components do and how they work, and then you could teach them the formulas, and then they use those formulas to design their robot to complete whatever task it is.
Okay. You, Chris?
Can you talk a little bit more about choosing JavaScript for this? Do you think there's any resistance to that in the schools? It's not currently probably not taught in schools, right?
So as far as the language selection goes, JavaScript has a very common syntax when you compare it to like C and C++ and Java. So since these are big programming groups, it for schools that don't already teach programming, this would be a good way to start teaching programming. I mean, JavaScript's as good a language to have an introduction to as compared to like C or C++ or any other language. And if schools don't want to teach the programming component themselves, it is possible for us to add a module in.
Good job. Good job. Thank you. Thanks, Crouton Labs. Good job. The Q&A is a tough part of this. Good job. We're going to introduce our next team in just a moment. We'll give the judges just a second. But Team Vanquish, how about coming up and joining me? Or do you need a minute with the technology, or are you okay? Okay, let's just wait a second. Welcome, guys. This team is from Wilfrid Laurier University, the other university here in town. I'd like you to welcome Vanquish. You guys ready to go? Judges okay? Let's go.
Are you familiar with the concept of Bernoulli trials? What about entropy? How about Venturi effect? All these are STEM principles that are evident in our daily lives. However, they're often overlooked or forgotten or taken for granted. Every day we use these principles, but we don't really give credit where it's due. So we started off here wanting to create a single video explaining the Bernoulli trials, a focused video. However, we quickly realized the power of digital media and learning through teaching. So instead, we ended up creating a web app with a video. This is where we came up with Mentor. What we've created here is not just a video, but a seed of a web app that can spawn into a community of students teaching other students.
Are you familiar with the concept of Bernoulli trials? A little wonder that can be traced back to Jacob Bernoulli, a Swiss mathematician who wrote a mathematical paper called Ars Conjectandi that was published 8 years after his death. You may think you know nothing of this, but odds are it's not something that's a large part of your life. You see, in theory of probability and statistics, a Bernoulli trial is an experiment whose outcome is random and can be either of two possible outcomes. It is a trial that has two values, 0 and 1. Also, repetition of trials are allowed and encouraged. This can be relayed back to a very mundane example in our daily lives. Two sides of a coin, heads or tails. More importantly, success or failure. Whether the success is linked to heads or tails is irrelevant. The point that matters is that there are two entirely separate outcomes. Every day, we face hundreds of individual trials. But the outcomes to these trials do not always reflect what their expected probability is. Even though a coin may have two sides, the chance of you getting either side will be around 50-50, but not exactly that. This ties into another one of Bernoulli's theorems, the law of large numbers. The law of large numbers states that as the number of trials, n, for an experiment approaches infinity, the actual results get closer and closer to the expected probability of success and failure. Although you may not have heard of Bernoulli before, it's now very clear that his theories are present hundreds, if not thousands of times in everyday life.
Right, so that was sort of our vision for this product, a combination of a video and sort of annotations that come in as real-time queries and user-submitted annotations. So the technology behind it is completely open source, and we're hoping to release something to developers very soon. And the basic idea of it is it'll be sort of accessible anywhere. It's going to be on mobile phones, it's going to be on tablets, you know, computers. It's going to be sort of everywhere. We're trying to make sure that this technology, just, you can access it on any device. And we actually do have a demo of it working fully on a mobile phone.
So he's just going to show you the demo quickly on mobile phone. So as you can see, the video works in full. The annotations are also working as well. Seeking works in the video. Move it up here. So we do have annotations working, seeking is working, and we also do have the app running in both orientations as well. If you want to rotate it, Akram. So the goal here was to create a conglomeration of readily available data along with newly created videos that can be submitted by either industry professionals or by students themselves. So these videos will complement live data as you saw, showing the video with these little sort of annotations that can help you out. So when you're watching a video on YouTube, you don't want to go and click another video just to understand the one you're watching currently. So this sort of gives you a very short bit of live information that can help you progress through the video. This will create a much more intuitive learning experience as you don't have to switch around. It's sort of an educational sandbox. Also, there will be lists available to conglomerate videos. So for instance, we could have grade 12 physics curriculum in Ontario as a list and all the videos that could be applicable to that list. And the idea is that the digital media can be hosted on YouTube or Vimeo still, so that all the ad revenue is still generated, all the view counts are still aggregated. However, there will not be any external links on our website so that you know that you're not leading your students to somewhere where they're getting distracted by cat videos at the end of the night.
Yeah.
And I think that's a major problem YouTube has right now. So we hope you enjoyed our demo, and we're now looking to entertain any questions.
Good job. Good job. Chris.
Are you planning to distribute the content, to build content distributed, or are you just going to distribute the platform?
I think with the main idea of this is anybody can teach. So we're going to try and distribute content. I'm sure we're going to get as many people as we can as well to distribute content. It's going to be from everybody. It's going to be completely crowdsourced. So.
Would that be for the comments as well? So what you would add would be the commentary underneath it, or who adds the...
So for this one, we actually created the video and the sort of web shell. But for future videos, we can also create videos, or industry professionals can. And the crowdsourced comments can be sort of voted up and down. And also, we're planning to implement an algorithm that sort of live searches based on transcriptions of the video. So for instance, if in a video this word is recurring a lot, we know it's going to be important. So we search up so you can get like recent news based on what the words are.
I don't have a question.
Okay. That
was my question.
Okay.
Good job, Angel.
Good job. You covered, Chris?
Yeah.
Folks, really good job, Vanquish. Really good job. Thanks, guys. You can head out this way. Good job. That's Vanquish from Wilfrid Laurier University. Are you ready to go? Could I have the next team, please? Called Higgs Brosons. Higgs Brosons from University of Guelph. Welcome. Here, you'll need this.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure the judges are good to go.
Wonderful.
Okay, we can begin. Let's go.
Okay, so for our brainstorm idea, we decided that everybody likes to feel special. And how do people feel special? Well, they take something that everyone has and use it in a unique way. For example, Facebook. The old timeline, people used to put pictures to extend their profile picture, which then prompted Facebook to make the banner option on the new timeline, which people still try to exploit. So what we're going to try and do is take the option for YouTube, where it's just annotation, where you can skip to another part of the video, and exploit that. So what we did is we took the annotation and we made a custom storyline. What you can do is actually hop through the YouTube video and figure out your storyline. And you choose what you want to learn. That way you don't get distracted by anything in the sidebar when you're clicking for new videos. The theme of BrainStem 2012 is educating the public, so we decided to break this up into main menus. We have lessons, applications, and modular. And all of these have their own special interactions to help you learn. Questions for lessons and sources for the application so you can know where it's coming from. And for modular, we speed some things up. Because we want this to be accessible to the general public, we decided to use origami and the mathematics behind it because it's beautiful, it's intricate, and everyone has access to it. So what we did is we made a video that we'll show you right now, which helps walk you through some of the basic things of origami and mathematics.
So what is origami anyways? I mean, I know it's the art of paper folding, but what can it do for me? Well, it actually puts satellites in space. It helps it analyze DNA molecules. It can analyze pollen spores. It can unclog your arteries. It can take your camera, make it 7 times more effective. And if you're wondering how all this is possible, click on one of the links that are going to be provided so you can start learning about the science behind origami.
So we click on lessons, which brings us to the main menu. We go to equilateral, which is about a grade 9 level.
First, we'll fold a blank piece of paper in half. Next, we'll take the top left corner and fold it to the black line. You'll notice this makes a triangle. I'll highlight this in red. So, my question to you is, what is the value
of x? Cut out. So, if you make a mistake, like 1 minus the square root of 3 over 2 because you're in grade 9.
Here's a hint.
We give you a hint, which will help you, and you see that the side length is hypotenuse.
In solving this question, you realize that this is a special triangle with a bottom angle of 30 degrees. By the Z pattern, we can see that the angle between the black and red line is also 30 degrees. Finally, by folding a line between the top left corner and the top of our red triangle, we can construct an equilateral triangle.
Now, this is very simple, and it brings you back to lessons, but it's a very simple setup. And what we wanted to do, though, was make it accessible to all grade levels. So, for instance, we can have grade 10 doing congruency in triangles. For grade 11, they can actually work with irrational numbers, deriving the cube root of 8 and actually proving that. For grade 12 advanced functions, you can actually use origami and the directrix of parabolas to solve general cubic equations on the paper, which is fascinating. Anything higher is just going to be abstract algebra. So under 48 hours of very little sleep, we created a 17-minute video of all these various topics, and we actually missed fractals, which we forgot to put in. But you can go through all these things. We go from medicine to physics to space to engineering, and we cover so much mathematical ground too. So the actual selling part, how are we going to do that? We're really excited because when we were doing the research, we found that another third-year undergraduate in Switzerland has designed an ink and printer system which actually folds the paper after it's printed. We're hoping to get this printer paper and sell it to high schools. They can put this in their special resource center for the kids who learn kinesthetically and not the predominant visual method in the high school curriculum currently. And we really hope that they can grab it and really learn the mathematics behind it. This is one application. It's a hyperboloid gear, which is used in engineering. And this is just made in like less than 5 minutes. We're actually going to hand out other applications that the program would teach you. And I'll take questions from the judges now.
Hey, good job. Good job. Chris.
I need help. Can you describe exactly what you're doing in one sentence? How would you describe it?
A create your own adventure video to help you learn math through paper folding.
Okay.
Good point.
Thank you.
All your videos are paper folding?
Well,
is that the thought? Or?
Yes, we would like them all to be origami because it's such a wide application. People came to our table and they started like learning stuff, and some guy came back and he's like, oh, you gotta show this other guy this thing, how you can collapse the two-dimensional plane into itself. There's a huge wide variety, and unfortunately 7 minutes is nowhere close to ever touch on how much origami can do. And people don't realize this, which is why we're trying to get this out, because it's a very predominantly Eastern tradition. And we're trying to try and introduce it to the Western public.
So this is a whole series of videos,
yes,
then.
And to actually market it to the high schools, we would like them to actually subscribe to a membership of a database of origami workbooks where they can actually fold the functions that is possible and learn how to do it. And they can get more perforated cutouts where they can actually fold things themselves to get a volumetric idea in 3D space also. And the ink would help the teacher do it seamlessly without effort.
I mean, it's actually quite extraordinary. But when you look at the scope of curriculum that teachers have to adhere to, especially with new mandates coming down, this would cover a very, very small portion of what teachers would feel that they might have time for. And so how do you sell or position against that? Even though you think students would engage, absolutely, it's nice, but how do you scale this when it only fits such a small market of the curriculum?
Well, it is math, and it's science, and it's biology, and it's chemistry. I didn't have time to construct a C60 carbon buckyball, but you can do that with origami, and I couldn't do it last night because I was just too tired.
It's okay.
However, okay. What we can do if they don't believe us, if they don't want kids to understand and learn and love math, then they can get out. And honestly, yeah. I'm dead serious. No, seriously. And what they can do, they can look at the YouTube videos. I have perfect confidence in my program that people will find this unique enough that they will want to do this.
Love it.
No, they will. And yes, thank you.
I love it.
And I really, I honestly believe that, and we've seen it with Minute Physics, with ViHeart, with Crash Course, and all the things that bring us here together. Those things are what kids are going to learn. And I believe that if we can get this up there on YouTube, kids would go there, they would learn this, they would want this. We could say, look at the pictures. Do you really think that like 70-year-old men or like workers are going to these sites? No, it's kids that are doing this hands-on learning for themselves. It's a laboratory for mathematics.
Okay, great job. I think we're covered. Great job.
And also, Matt, who is my partner, is offering everything in the back at the time. I just wanted to say thank you, Matt. He's a great guy.
Good job, guys. Good job. Could we just have a little more commitment to this, do you think? But thank you. And from University of Guelph, we've now covered all the wonderful post-secondary institutions in this region. I think that's just exceptional, the job the organizers have done. But ladies and gentlemen, we have our ninth team. I have to say last but not least, because that's for sure. Ultramarine Neutrinos from University of Waterloo. Come on up, please. We'll just wait one sec. Judges, are you okay? Timing, everything ready to go. Our last presentation.
All right, thanks. Hi, I'm John. This is Pavel. So have you ever wondered what it'd be like to go through a black hole? Who knows what happens? Maybe you come out the other side in another universe or something through a white hole. But what about your friends and family back at home? What about them? They'll look at you, and they'll never actually see you enter the event horizon. They'll see you slowly redshift until you fade away into darkness.
So these ideas are kind of surrounded by an awe and often a misunderstanding in the general public. But people do consider them cool and do want to learn about them. So we decided to, and the main reason that people misunderstand them is because they are clearly outside of our human experience. You can't go to a store and buy a black hole, sadly. But so what we decided to do is make a game that actually brings these concepts to your everyday experience and allows you to actually build an intuition based on these physical concepts, and this intuition is required to actually beat the levels and move on, etc.
Yeah, so the reason why we chose a game is that we can set objectives for the user, so we can have some introductory levels for the user to become familiar with the interface and to become familiar with the physics concepts, and then we can have a puzzle level where we can test their knowledge, which requires the user to understand the concept.
Okay, so I guess I'll go into explaining the game. So first of all, the main idea of the game is to go from a source to a kind of a goal on the screen. So in this level, we have a black hole in the center with anti-neutrinos circling it and neutrinos going in. So what you see is annihilation there. This is a speed slider. And this is a full general relativity simulation that we did ourselves. We did all the physics engines for this game ourselves. So the goal is to go from this source, which is a supernova, to a sink, which is our galaxy, where we want to measure the neutrinos. And the particles move along. So unlike in most games where you can actually control the position of the particle, here they just move along the trajectory that they would naturally follow. And what you can control is these, for example, in this case, three things. So you can modify the laws of physics for these particles and therefore make them move where you want to. So in this case, you can change the attractive pull of the black hole so that it doesn't get attracted as much and actually goes around and hits the goal. You can also change it to an antiparticle so it doesn't annihilate the neutrinos, etc.
Okay, great. So in our second level, we're going to be looking at quantum mechanics. So the idea is that we're sending neutrons here from a source, and we're trying to get them into our dark matter detector over here on the right, because we want to calibrate our dark matter detector. So we want to get as many neutrons in as possible so we can get the best calibration. But they're stuck in this thing. So what we can do is we can turn them into an antiparticle so that they'll annihilate with the wall. But we want to get as many as we can. So we can also turn on quantum mechanics, and we can tunnel them through. What actually happens is the localized particle temporarily turns into a wave packet, and it evolves under Schrodinger time evolution. And then at some time later, it gets localized again.
So, and then to make it more accessible to the general public, because people don't really play computer games nowadays. Everybody has their smartphones and Blackberries and, you know, trendy devices. And it's much easier to waste a lot of time with these devices. So we decided to put it on a smartphone. And so in particular, we'll demonstrate our third level, which is more like what the real level will look like on the smartphone. So the first two were kind of educational, as John mentioned. And this third one is going to have more walls. So this is the LHC. And you have protons moving through, and you're trying to hit the ATLAS detector, of course. And you have more walls. You can have particles bouncing around much more. You have to combine these different concepts of attracting to the black holes, of tunneling, of annihilating the walls, etc. And you can collect things like that star, for example, for bonus points. And because, you know, so it would seem like it's easy to go around this box, but you can't actually control where your particle is going. It's moving in straight lines. So this box contains a black hole in the center. So you might actually want to go through this box and follow the trajectory around the black hole to the other wall, etc. So this is kind of the puzzle level that this game might realistically contain. You also are limited to a certain amount of energy or power to this special things you can use, and with different levels you will get upgrades, so the more levels you pass you will unlock more powers and so on. So this game has lots of possibility for expansion, etc. So this is the first kind of prototype.
open it up to questions.
Good job. Good job. Our judges.
Could you talk a bit about what tools you used to program it and why you chose them?
Yeah, we did it in Flash just because it's easy to export to smartphones, Android, iOS, BlackBerry.
Online as well?
Right. Browsers.
Very portable. Good. How do you see monetizing this?
Okay, sure. So I mean, clearly through app stores is one easy way. You can also do browsers and have advertisements. But I think the main pull of this will be the smartphone apps.
Okay.
It's nice you can, you know, just pull it out, play a level for a couple minutes, and then put it away and learn a physics concept. Think about it while you drive home or whatever.
What would your marketing to that be?
I think the main market is people who have a strong passion for these interesting physics ideas. They want to learn about quantum mechanics, but they don't necessarily have the time to, you know, do a full undergraduate course, and then you only get to black holes maybe in grad school. Mm-hmm. So this will make it accessible to the public, people who are curious about physics. You want to see?
And the main idea is that there's actually, in school you learn equations and math, and a lot of time people don't actually kind of have a visual picture with it. Whereas here, you know, starting from middle school, people can play this game and like they will remember an intuition of what happens with a wave function, what happens near a black hole, and have the like real understanding of this rather than kind of a misconception.
It seemed like you were suggesting that the main gameplay is changing the constants of nature.
Sure.
We don't do that. So how is this actually a simulation of the real, or am I misunderstanding something?
So it's a simulation of the real until you change the constants of nature. So it's following the true way, the true equations of motion in physics. But once you actually change the... So changing the constants allows you to see what effect this will have on the particular motion.
Exactly. Good job. Good job, guys. Well done. Well done. Ultramarine neutrinos from the University of Waterloo. Folks, that's it. All nine teams. Could we give a hand to all of them? Just one more. They'll hear this from... Wow. I am impressed, as I know you are. Let's take a minute, okay? Because you have a job to do now, too, before we let you out of here. Everyone, we want all of your votes. And as we prepare to leave in just a moment, our team will take them just by the door. There's the green box being held up. Thanks. We'll deposit them. I want to thank our judges for their work. They've got a tough assignment for the next 20 minutes, half an hour to make their selections, but good job and thank you very, very much. I'd also like to thank our key sponsor for this, the Federal Economic Development Agency, FedDev, of Southwestern Ontario, of Southern Ontario, for their support that made the build-a-thon and the conference happen. We appreciate that. Now you've made your votes. It's now time to proceed downstairs to the second floor bistro where we're going to have a lunch together and an award ceremony. Thanks for your participation here. Please leave us your ballots right over here as you head out. But good job, folks. We'll see you for lunch in just a moment. Thanks.